my friends, and welcome to the Art Girl on Fire podcast. I'm Amanda. I'm on a journey of healing, and I'm bringing you with me. Now, first things first, I am not a guru. I'm just a woman learning new things and sharing stories from other folks who are doing the same. I'll be sitting down to talk with other artists and creatives who are also on this path to being better humans. We'll talk about art, creating, having a spiritual practice. We'll have some amazing conversations as we all get together and share our stories. There will be episodes where it'll just be little old me. I'll share some practical tools for healing and personal growth. I'll tell you my story, the beautiful as well as the ugly parts, and I hope that you're encouraged on your own path to healing. It's my sincere belief that the more of us who make the choice to heal individually, the better off the whole world will be collectively. So sit down, get comfy, and let's get down to it. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Art Girl on Fire podcast. I'm Amanda. I have a really special guest today. Parker Detchen is here with me. He is an artist and also a spiritual life coach. So why don't you introduce yourself? Yeah. What's your elevator pitch, I guess, and then we can dig in.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be here. Like you said, I'm an artist. I, you know, have been a painter my whole life and concurrently a spiritual seeker. You know, I'm only recently really taking on the teacher role in an official way. I've always been a counselor for my friends and family because, you know, I've been diving deep my whole life. I've always been really curious about the bigger questions. And because I've already done a lot of research and contemplating on those topics, I've been able to help my loved ones that are around me. And recently I've kind of taken a turn towards helping the general public. And that's how you found me, was because I've made the move towards producing content for TikTok, you know, social media and stuff like that, little self-help stuff. So, you know, yeah, now I'm a life coach like the rest of them.
Right. Cool. So you said your life experience kind of led you to that. So in this present moment, like where you are in life right now, what would you say you're the most passionate about? And what in your life so far has brought you to that place?
Sure. Yeah. I think the thing I'm most passionate about and have been my whole life, like I said, are those bigger questions and the steps towards being able to integrate the spiritual wisdom that comes from the pursuit of those answers. Because at the end of the day, spirituality to me is null if you're not applying it, right? Like, I'm a very hands-on type of person. I learn by doing, and I generally try to apply the wisdom of the sages into a day-to-day way. And so the thing I'm most passionate about is creating and applying the self-awareness that it takes to be able to shift some of the problem areas that I've experienced in my life, and be able to use the knowledge of, you know, whether it's authors or scriptures or just self-awareness to be able to improve my day-to-day life, you know, relieve suffering for myself and others, and generally create like a little bit more ease and happiness by being able to go through life with a little bit more poise, yeah, or gracefulness.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for that. Yeah. So right now, what are you studying specifically? Are there any texts or books that you would recommend to anyone who's also seeking like we are?
Yeah. I mean, I have a myriad of books under my belt. Right now, I'm reading Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. So like trying to make sure I don't fall into the pitfalls of the egocentric teacher, because there's a lot of them and I have a disdain for them, as most people do.
I agree.
So I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that guy either. So that's kind of where I'm at. But for, you know, any people who are listening or watching, there's so many, and it really depends on where the student is, like where the person is in their life and like how far along the path they are, you know? So it's, it's kind of tough to prescribe a book for a general public, because that's like trying to prescribe a medication.
Right. Everyone's coming from a different place. I know when I first started getting serious with life is not, this isn't working and I need to change. I need to work on myself. I bought up all these books, like anything that kind of resonated at all, I would just buy it up. I got on Thrift Books. You can get books really cheap there. And a lot of them I haven't read yet, but I have the ones that really, you know, when the time is right, you'll find what you need. I sincerely believe that. Like, you'll meet the right people, you'll find the text, you'll find things. And there are some books that I've started reading recently that if I had read them 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would not have understood what I was even reading.
Yeah, it would
Right over the head. Yeah. Right over, now, you know, I'm picking up texts in the first few chapters. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, totally, totally. And then I get to learn some new stuff too. And so that's kind of exciting right now, you know, because I can see a little bit of growth, but like it's a lifetime process. You're never done. But it's nice to feel like, okay, I'm retaining some things. I'm building some tools for like spiritual maintenance, I guess. So speaking of that, what are things, like practical things you do in just in your daily life? This isn't prescribing for the public, but what does Parker Dechen do daily to keep balance and to stay centered on, you know, your goals and your spiritual practice? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. So, you know, what I do is basically based in self-awareness. Like at the end of the day, you know, that saying you are your own guru is because you are the teacher that knows you best. And so I practice as much self-awareness as possible. So that comes from a background in meditation and journaling and self-inquiry, like I said, that I've been doing my whole life. And like in a real day-to-day way, I look at the situations that I'm going through, especially any like pain points, like, oh, I'm really frustrated about this, or, oh, I'm really upset. Anything that's like creating some dis-ease. And I look intently at those things and I try to dig to the root of those things. So if it's like something to do with like a relationship dynamic or, just something that I, you know, maybe it's a project and I have a block with, you know, that I'm not moving forward on. In a real day-to-day way, I take a good hard look at like what that is stemming from and like what mental self-talk is happening there to try to break it down and reverse engineer it and undo it so that I can move forward in a healthy way. So for me, it's like a lot of where am I struggling? Why am I struggling? How do I undo that? How do I like switch up the dialogue or look at it in a new way? So that it's a bit of a process, but like I could be anywhere along any of those steps with any project or dynamic. But for me, like, yeah, that's the most like regular ongoing thing is like, where do I feel like I'm out of, like it's cheesy, people say it all the time, but out of alignment, like where, like I has a pretty clear vision of like how smooth things can be. And then I just try to like see where things aren't really like feeling that way and dissect them. And I think it's that dissection that is self-awareness, right? If you can see yourself messing up, then you have a shot at fixing it. A lot of people can't see where they're messing up and that's where they need others to sort of reflect and bounce back at them. I've always had the innate ability to sort of like see myself in the mirror a little bit, but if I am missing something, then people will certainly, you know, my loved ones will let me know, hey, when you said it like this, it affected me like that. And I'll, oh, right. Thank you. And, but yeah, it's a lot of, really like unadulterated self-inquiry. And you know, I think journaling, I use journaling and meditation essentially the most. These days, I mean, to be blunt, like I'm not really using it in a daily ongoing way. I'm using it like medicinally, like if I feel that I'm like way out of whack or like really off base or lost, I will sit and journal a lot more to try to find my way. Just because you know, 3 pages into stream of consciousness journaling, and you can't help but like already have the drab out of the way, you know, the brain drain of like your day-to-day life kind of fades in the first 2 pages. And then by the third or the fourth, you're kind of like bigger picture thinking, and it can help me really quickly get back on board. But honestly, like the one thing that I can say to prescribe to the masses is meditation. Like I studied Vipassana meditation, but basically like any decent meditation practice that can calm you down, help you like take a more observer role in your life and in your mindset is going to do wonders for anybody who's on the path in a myriad of ways. Yeah,
I completely agree with that. My son all the time, I'm sure he gets tired of me telling him, but he's like, oh, mom, I'm stressed out. Like, I'm like, you know what I'm going to tell you? Like, yeah, you should meditate, right? Like, yes. And I was talking with a really dear friend of mine last week, and she's just started her meditation practice the last few months. And she's like, you know, it isn't easy and I can't quiet my mind very well, but it's practice, right? And I'm like, exactly. It's exactly. You don't just step in and you just know how to drop into that place. Like it takes practice. Right. But man,
it's often make the metaphor that it's kind of like muscle training, you know, that you can't expect to go into the gym and be able to like deadlift 1,000,000 pounds. It's just, it's a lot of slow repetition stuff and that can be strong.
And what's cool, what was cool to me when I started years ago, I'm kind of an anxious person, and through certain times in my life, it got really severe. And meditation, along with my yoga practice, has taught me how to recognize feeling physically safe. Like if I'm in a calm mindset, what does that feel like physically? And so now I can call to mind the physical sensations when I'm needing to calm my mind, and that gets me there quickly. Because it's like once you train your body to understand that you're safe and what that looks like, when you feel unsafe, you can be like, no.
Right.
Feel it, drop into that space. And that's been huge for me.
Muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like all the systems work together, the physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. And if you can like fish hook into one and start there, it doesn't matter which layer it is. Eventually you can get all those layers to kind of talk with each other and play nice. And it's been fantastic. Fantastic.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I like that technique. That's a lovely one. It often reminds me of like, there was this like nature documentary, and it was watching, an animal being chased by a predator, and it got away. And then, you know, after the fight or flight scenario was over, something that humans struggle with a lot is like shaking it off. And this animal, this young calf, literally shook it off, like used its physical body and just kind of like wiggled all the way out to the tail. You could literally see it start at the head and then wiggle out the tail. And instantly it went back to grazing.
And it'll go back to that same field to graze tomorrow, because it's not like there might be a fox there. There might be this, you know what I mean?
Sure. So but like that physical, like if you can anchor in the physical, if you can shake it off, or like you're saying, muscle memory of like what it feels like to be calm. Like all that stuff helps for sure.
Yeah. There was a time where I had panic attacks in grocery stores. Like that was the sweet spot, so to speak, for my physical panic to come on me. Was crazy. And it's not that I don't like crowds or people, or it was just something about the grocery store. I don't know.
It's a lot.
And it's been over a year now since that's happened, because I can like find that place, you know. And in regards to that animal on the documentary, I was reading to where animals in the wild, they have that capability, but domesticated animals do not. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, they haven't been hunted.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. And we're pretty domesticated animals.
Yep. Our dog is nervous. Like anything, she's scared of doorways. She's scared of her water bowl. Mm-hmm. She's scared to jump on the bed, jump off the bed. She's just a nervous wreck all the time. And I feel bad that she doesn't have the
capability. Well, it's interesting. It's interesting that the dog and the owner are dealing with anxiety together.
Yep.
You should meditate with the dog.
Yeah. She doesn't care, but my cats, they meditate with me. They'll curl up in my lap. I think that's pretty cool. They're pretty in tune. They're great cats. So
cats usually are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, I can understand why they used to think that they were witches' familiars, because they dig all the, I mean, any part of my practice, my cats are there for it. They like to curl up on my stones. They meditate with me. They hog my yoga mat. They're there for everything. So it's pretty awesome.
They're pretty sharp animals. Yeah.
Real smart. So I have a question for you about your artwork. Did you find that once you made the conscious decision to grow as a person, heal, however you want to phrase it, did your artwork change? Did how you make it change? Did you find your creativity was more free-flowing? That kind of thing.
So my artwork has always reflected just my mental state. I think that applies to most artists, if not all. And so the subject matter basically is dictated by like what's rattling around in my mind. And I guess to the question of like, if when I shifted, then the artwork shifted. Yeah, I would say the subject matter certainly did. It went from a lot of, you know, sort of, I was making just pure imagery, essentially, a lot of like graffiti and like, you know, pure imagery of just, you know, representative stuff, you know, just figurative work, basically student. And then, you know, it turned towards like messaging, like in the same way that I'm messaging these days, I was doing it even like early on, even just with like the written word on large pieces of canvas or, you know, anything that I could find. I started out, and I still do, by using a lot of like recycled materials. I would simply go into the streets or, you know, I would even go to construction sites and pull scrap wood out of their trash piles. And I would get recycled house paint, you know, we're talking like free stuff, cheap stuff, and make as much artwork as possible because I struggled to find my voice. So I would have to make a lot of work to be able to sort of hone that in. And that's definitely a piece of advice I give to any aspiring artist, is make a lot of stuff, because you just have to knock out so much work to be able to even get close to like what it is you want to say or how you want it to look. So I was just making a ton of stuff. And then it really did kind of shift aesthetically for me, probably around the time that I was like first experimenting with psychedelics and like getting a little bit more like honed towards the spiritual path. I was always on it. Like, you're never not on it, right? But like, I was definitely foot on the gas with it in my like mid to late 20s. That's when a lot of like the sacred geometry and like more symbolic messaging started coming in. There was less words being written, and it was more symbols being shown, so that it wasn't as nail on the head about like what I was saying, which is actually kind of interesting, because even though I went towards like, you know, there's this spectrum in design arts where it's like you're either hitting the nail on the head by writing what you're saying literally on a poster, and then there's the other end of the spectrum, which is like pure poetry, which would be a painting that is like one color, right? Mm-hmm. It's like impossible to really dive into like what that means unless you speak to the artist,
right,
or read an artist statement. And I was like leaning towards the poetry side, but I was like at least still in the gray area. And I found, honestly, that, you know, in the last year, that I felt that I wasn't really connecting with my audience as deeply as I wanted to. And so that's why I began producing more video content. So like even just in the last year, I was making video content about my paintings, and I was using the video itself to say, this is what the painting is about. And I was literally doing voiceover and saying, this is what I'm doing. Here's why I'm doing it. This is what I mean. And I found that essentially just using painting as like an in-between me and my audience, and here I was just saying the topic out loud. So I shifted towards just talking about it out loud now. And that's why I'm making just straightforward content of me on camera. So it sort of evolved from this, like, not knowing what to say to saying it literally with a written word, but not being part of the exchange, just having the art be out in the streets mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then becoming part of the exchange, but having the art sort of more poetic and hard to read. And now I'm literally the one saying the straightforward message. So it's kind of evolved in that way for me. And now my art is a 1-minute video of me saying hello, and this is what I'm working on, and I hope it helps you. So, you know, I've sort of taken the paintbrush out of the dynamic now, and the medium is the video camera for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Did you find that in your healing, like you said, and I agree, we're always on the path. It's just a matter of where and what we're digging into at the moment.
Yeah, how aware of that you are.
Yeah. Was there a catalyst for you, like, in your life where you, I guess that moment where you wake up and are like, the way I'm doing life isn't working?
Man, there's so many.
Right.
But, yeah, there's a lot of, like, little shoves along the way. Yeah, I mean, I can think of a few. I think early on, one of the, like, just being able to perceive life young, I was a rambunctious, anarchic skateboarder as a youth. And I remember being on the Metro North train into New York City as a kid with a skateboard and ratty jeans and a backpack, like, ready to go skate the city, coming from these, like, you know, WASPy suburbs of Connecticut. And there was all of these dudes wearing suits, reading the Wall Street Journal on this train car, and they all looked identical, and it was like straight out of a movie. I'll never forget. I was like, I will never do that. And you know, basically not conform, not like go down the predetermined path that all these guys had gone down. You know, I'm sure they were all, you know, at, anyway, for me, that was like a way of seeing, like, oh, okay, I can see how people get, like, into these, like, trenches, like how it's like this, like I said, predetermined path. And so early on, I could see, like, oh, okay, well, I just don't want to end up like a barcode number, you know, for some cog in this big machine. And so that to me was like an early sort of a career one, which sort of pushed me more towards like artistry and like seeing if there was another way of being in the world that had to me a little bit more like expression or meaning to it that I could involve myself in a little bit more passionately than it seemed like just the hustle for cash could do. But then like more spiritually speaking, I mean, like that probably changed my path like at that point. Right. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, honestly, like, so my mom was always taking us to church every Sunday. We grew up Christian Protestant, and like from a very young age, the same sort of energy was expressed because I had older brothers who were already rebelling. So by the time I was 9 or 10 and able to sort of start to think for myself in a larger way, they were already like 15, 16 and like, you know, breaking all the rules and like didn't want to go to church and could point out how messed up it was in different ways. And so I was like exposed in that way while still being forced to go. And so I was
right.
In an interesting way became sort of like a devil's advocate within a Christian ministry of like, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm not a dull person. I'm very sharp and like cutting, and I can make arguments pretty logically. And so they forced me to go all the way through to like where you are confirmed, right? You have to be like, I think 13 or 14 to be able to like actually say, you know what, this is what I believe in. Mm-hmm. And they just couldn't get me to say it. I was the only person in the whole group that wouldn't go through with it. It was wild. And I remember one of my skater buddy friends was in it too. And he was like, bro, just say yes, and then we can all go skating. And I'm like, no, like there's no, I just couldn't get on board with a lot of their logic. And for me early on, it was the dogmatic, I have no proof of this. You just have to believe what I say.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, later on when I was doing spiritual research, it has to have some sort of left brain logical basis for me. And that's where a lot of, like, you know, quantum mechanics and, like, the science that's at the fringe of what we have is available can, like, help support some of the woo-woo out there, difficult to believe stuff. Sorry, this is a long-winded answer, but
no,
basically,
that's fine.
Like, it was a number of things. Those are some early ones. And granted, like, I will not totally throw Christianity under the bus. There are nuggets of gold in there, and I felt that I had already mined them, and that's why I was well into the argumentative, don't take this so literally stage at that point in my life. But I certainly got a lot of high grade morality out of that upbringing, which my mother was sure to make sure that I held on to. But the next, like, big point was taking a Buddhism class in high school. I actually had a Christian, it was like a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they had their own church, they had their own ministry, and one of the ministers taught, like, one of the world religion courses in Buddhism, and he literally taught us how to meditate when I was, I think, a junior in high school. And here's this guy wearing a collar teaching Buddhism, and I was awoken to the fact that Buddhism had a non-sectarian approach, right? A non-dogmatic mm-hmm. approach, which struck me very strongly, because here's this religion that is not inherently religious in the ways that I had seen all the other religions, which is believe this or you're not part of our crew. And
yeah, don't break the rules kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have rules, right? Like, no harm and stuff like that. But just the non-dogmatic approach to me was powerful. So that was, like, I think probably, yeah, that, and then probably I would say maybe a couple psychedelic experiences later were the last couple of big shifts. Yeah.
Interesting. I was raised in church too. No, you're fine. We've got plenty of time. Like I said, we're just talking. But I was raised in church. My parents were in and out of church, like, easily offended. And so we would leave when someone made them mad. You know what I mean? And but we kind of settled for a couple years in more of the charismatic, like, Pentecostal type churches. Not the women can't wear pants and no makeup version, but the more modern, you know, but we run around and holler, that kind of version. And like you said, I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And actually, as a Reiki healer, when I'm working and healing, Jesus is there with me working on people, no matter what they believe, he still chooses to heal them. And to me, that was one of the most beautiful, I guess the best way to explain it is the Jesus that I know now and interact with is so much more loving and real and authentic than the Jesus the church taught me about growing up.
Yeah.
And I wasn't surprised, but it made my heart very full and happy to get to know him that way. And and like you said, the golden rule and growing up and be honest, have integrity. Like, there are some tenets of Christianity that are very beautiful, but it's not the only religion that has those tenets. You know,
I would say they all have that.
Yeah. And I have some friends who they're not Christian scientists per se, but they believe in unity and, you know, a lot of the Christian tenets, but more of a scientific basis. And they're really great to talk to as well. Like, just, I like to talk to everybody. I like to hear what everyone's got going on. Like, I think one of the things that I have thrown out with Christianity is just that fear-based mindset of just being scared of anything that is not within the church or within what you believe, scared of people who don't believe. And a huge one, especially in, like, Pentecostal circles, was what here in the South we call it devil chasing. Basically, anything bad that happens to you, it's because the devil's making it happen. Anything scary, any sound in your house, any big emotion you feel, it's spirits, it's demons, it's the devil. He's going to get you. you know, I was scared of the dark until I was 30. I'll just tell you how bad that messed me up with all the devil chasing I was
facing. Yeah, fear-mongering.
Yeah. And now where I'm at, like my stepdaughter the other day, she's like, you know, I guess because Halloween's coming up and she likes spooky stuff and scary movies. She's like, Amanda, what are you scared of? And I was like, you know, I'm not scared of anything. Like, there's nothing anymore. I'm not. And it was kind of a revelation for me because I just don't think about it. So I never thought about that question either. And I was like, that made me really happy to know that, like, now I'm not so afraid of everything. And when you were growing up, too, I guess with Christian school and being in church, did they ever have the, like, this huge emphasis on your life choices being God's will for your life? Like, what is my purpose? What is God's will? If I make this decision, I might be pulled out of his will for my life. I better not be in a relationship with this person if it's not God's. Like, everything was so, again, just fear-based. Like, you're going to do something wrong. You're going to go off track. You know, it was all wrong. There's like one little bad, you know. And it's nice not to be there. Like,
yeah, I checked out hard. Like, I feel like by age like 10, I got it. I was like, you know, don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, yeah. That's pretty much it. Like, I decided pretty early on that I had, dissolved the teaching down to, or reduced the teaching down to be a good person, mm-hmm. period. And let the rest of it be up to your judgment as to like what that is, you know, and base it on, you know, yeah, love essentially. And, you know, so when they would go off on details and the rest of it and sermon after sermon, I just was waiting till it was over so I could go back to my life, because I feel like I had already kind of understood
the
essence of the teaching. Yeah, wasting my time. So I checked out a lot with like the do this, don't do that. I was like, yeah, no, I'm just going to feel it in my gut, whether it's like the right thing or the wrong thing. And I'm going to trial and error my way into the position that I'm in now. And it seems to have worked out just fine.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. You had mentioned a little bit earlier when we were talking a little bit about your coaching business that you started, that you know, you don't want to be the ego version of yourself in regards to that. Yeah. As far as the spiritual community as a whole, I guess like quote unquote the spiritual community, you know, you and I, we're white people, 30s, 40s. We have a lot of privilege in a lot of ways. How do you reconcile that with the work that you do, and what are you doing to, I guess, remedy that, if that makes sense? Because I know that I see a lot of whitewashing in the yoga community is a big one. I'm certified to teach, but I am not teaching anywhere right now because I'm trying to find a place that isn't like that. And we see a lot of Instagram gurus, a lot of TikTok spiritual advisors, stuff like that. How are you kind of separating from that?
Yeah, I guess I'm just not really like incorporating it. It's a good question. You know, I understand that I have hella white privilege that I was like born into and was able to, you know, capitalize on. But at the same time, to me, spirituality and the teachings therein don't hold any creed. You know, they don't, they apply to everybody. And I'm certainly wide open to any student from any background. So, you know, and putting content out on social media, it, you know, the algorithm doesn't care what the creed is either. So it's not like it's not as if I'm inhibiting my content in any way. So I think just by putting it out in a broad way might be a good enough answer there, which is I'm not withholding in any fashion, which, you know, if there was some sort of like, if I had an angle and I was trying to only say it to certain people, like in the ways that you see religions do, like, okay, well, if you believe this, that only this group can hear this, but no, I'm, you know, it's on the internet. Like anybody
can. Right.
Yeah, I don't discriminate at all. And I don't think that it applies. I think the only thing that applies in the discernment between one student and another is simply where they're at on the path, what they understand, what they need to hear. To me, it doesn't matter at all. Color, age, sexual preference. Like, I've met young people who are far advanced to me and those around me. I've met people of all races and cultures and backgrounds that have unique perspectives that can bring to the table other ways of looking at the world that offer amazing insight. And yeah, I'm a straight white guy, and I think I understand that, but I don't find any prestige or power in that. I just don't really use it in that way. I understand that I was given a leg up in my upbringing and the start and the way that the culture works in America, but I feel that even though that's the case, now that I'm in a position where I have, a footing, let's say, that I'm offering what I have as far as spiritual awareness to everybody and anybody. And I think that's the best way that, we can help to bring everyone back up to equal. I think it's probably all that I can really do. Right.
I agree. I think, like you said, being willing to share and to work with everyone, like, we're not gatekeeping. One thing I know, a lot of people, they demonize social media, and it has done some damage, but I think it's also helped us build community, and more inclusive community in a lot of ways. And I really like that. I've lived a whole bunch of different places.
Especially right now, right?
Especially. And through the pandemic, we were also isolated, and I think it helped us have kind of a meeting place virtually. Or not, you wouldn't be talking to me right now if there was no social media. So I like the accessibility of it for everyone,
It's so true. And, TikTok, especially right now with the way that their algorithm works, is doing that really effectively, because, over the last, let's say 10 years, you've still been quite isolated in these little internet bubbles of like who you can connect with. And, as a visual artist, I've been struggling to put visual art out there to the masses, because I would put a post up and 100 of my friends out of 1,000 had seen it. And I was always like, why am I getting 10% of my following, and the following wasn't growing? And now TikTok has really kind of blown the doors off. I've been able to find, I'm almost at 100,000 followers now, and I've only been on for 6 months, and it's really opened up that sense of community and that connection between lots and lots of people, that you can really quickly find your niche, not only audience, but community and like people that you can relate to. And so I feel like it's really just in the last year or two that's really kind of like taken off. And I look forward to how that increases over the next 5 to 10.
I agree. Yeah, TikTok has been good. I made a new friend on there, and we Zoom called each other yesterday and just got to know each other. And she's a Reiki healer as well. She reads the Akashic Records. And I mean, it was a great, encouraging conversation for both of us. Really enjoyed it. And I think TikTok is also good for the other side of that coin. If you just go on the general For You page, like people you don't follow, you'll see people with wildly differing opinions and beliefs. And I think that's really good. That's something that Facebook and Instagram have kind of gotten wrong the last few years. It's insulating people in their little circles and echo chambers of, everyone thinks like me. I'm perfectly right.
It certainly makes for a healthier society to have that sort of democratic conversation happening.
Definitely.
I'm interested too. I don't know if you've heard of this, but there's like Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3. Have you heard of this?
I haven't.
Where it's like Web 1 was like the internet, when we could only go on and just look at things.
Right.
And then Web 2 is the internet when we could go on and look at things and then share them with people. Mm-hmm. There was like a look at this that I found. And then Web 3 is like, let me wonder if I'm saying this correctly, but it's basically, instead of requiring a platform in order to look at things and share things, that individuals such as ourselves become the platform, that I am Facebook for my little niche, my little world, and people simply come to me to be able to like engage in seeing things, sharing things, and being a part of a community, so that like the Facebooks and Instagrams are going to democratize out into I have my own platform and community as Web3. So, you know, coming on, having your own podcast, having your own website, having your own little world of a community that, you know, there might be still some like, in order to build the community from scratch, that you might need some of the larger platforms that are more like, you know, global. Mm-hmm. And then once you find your niche and you begin to grow it, that you can funnel people to like a, almost like Discord servers are right. Kind of like a common one that we're hearing of already, that's kind of Web 3.0.
Oh yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And you can see the evolution, like you can see it happening in real time.
Yeah, it might be a little echo chambery, but at least it'll be like a central meeting point for more niche groups, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably how it's going to go. It seems forefront right now. Like it still seems maybe 5 years out that's going to be like a household situation, but or it's like a commonly understood way that the world works on the internet. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like people making their own little ecosystems. Like people, like, you know, stars are already doing that, but the average producers aren't. They're still reliant upon the bigger social media companies. But I think you're going to see a trend towards not relying upon them. You know, since the question is like, if Instagram goes down, are you really a model? You know, like,
right.
and like the same thing goes for like, oh, I have an audience. Well, if TikTok went down, I wouldn't, you know, mm-hmm. So. Building out like a backup plan basically for that, so that people can still connect and share the ideas and, you know, centralize around a single point. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, as far as spirituality goes, like, doesn't matter whether the internet exists at all, that stuff can still happen for people in their lives.
Oh yeah. Yep. I remember in high school walking over to the public library and getting the yoga books, and, you know, there was no YouTube. We didn't have a right. computer in our house.
Totally. Yeah.
And I was like, you know, people will still find information. And, you know, you build communities where you're at, but I'm very thankful right now for the online community. I know specifically we relocated.
The information age is definitely advantageous. Makes it a lot faster.
Right, right. Yeah, we've relocated a few times for jobs and stuff. And when we came to where we are now in Tennessee, I didn't know one person in real life, like no one. And I met my yoga instructor on Facebook. I found some groups of yoga meetups, and I found other hairdressers, you know. So, like, the internet is like the yellow pages now. Like, in the 80s, we had the yellow pages.
Was yoga kind of your transition between Christianity and Reiki?
You know, it was in a way. I've always been... It always feels like, you know, spirit has nudged me toward healing in so many ways. Like when I was young, my mom had really terrible headaches, and I would rub her head, and she would always say, "Oh man, your hands are so hot. They get hot when you, it feels so good, you know." And when I was 20, I went to massage therapy school. I did that for a little while. My first husband was not real supportive of that. He was like, "You need to stay home and have babies, whatever." So I gave up massage therapy, but I always kind of studied, and I kept practicing yoga at home. It was like my private practice. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I started researching alternative, like holistic health, aromatherapy, and essential oil therapies. I started learning about that mm-hmm. about 10 years ago. So studying that, that's part of the evolution. It's like a snowball, I guess. And then... my big catalyst was like a really traumatic emotional time in my life. And the reason that finding my center physically, why that works for me, is because of my yoga foundation. And when I was starting to heal from what had happened, one day I was practicing, you know, and I was just trying to breathe. Like I was doing all I could just to take one deep, good breath, you know, working at it. It was like almost painful, but I was like, I need this, you know? Yeah. And so about an hour into it, I'm sitting down, I take this breath, and it's, you know, from the top of my head to my toes, I feel myself like fill up, and then my heart center just like cracked open. Like it was a physical, visceral, you know, it, and then all this energy just flooded in, just pure love. I mean, it was, I can barely explain it. I don't know. It was just in that moment, you know, I realized that no matter what had happened, I wasn't stupid. I wasn't unworthy. I wasn't ugly. I was worthy of love, like real, honest love. And that started this recent sustainable path for me. And so I kept practicing yoga. And then when that happened, I started researching energy work and the energy body. I knew a little bit, you know, because yoga moves energy. But, you know, I was raised in America. I'm some white lady. Yoga was kind of a fitness thing and a relaxation technique, you know? And so when I finally viewed it as spiritual practice, like it blew me out of the water. Like things changed rapidly and very positively for me. I started healing in big ways. And then of course, like I want everyone to know, like, you know, if you're feeling this, if you're going through that, like you are not alone. Like this helps, you know, I'm here, I'll listen to you. Got my Reiki certification. And then once I got my attunement, which is where, you know, the Reiki master teacher, basically, Reiki is healing energy and you're a conduit, and everyone, we're all connected, unified field, we're all connected. But when you get your attunement, it's like your spigot for energy was kind of dripping your whole life, and now it's on full blast. And you can, you know, turn it on, turn it off, share it however you need to.
Cool.
And so once that happened, my meditation practice, like through the roof, I was able to drop in much more quickly. I mean, it's like all these little fingers and like rivers offshooting from my yoga practice, like just started falling into place. And I remember after my first attunement for Reiki, I'm walking out of the building and I started to cry, and I was like, this is it. Like, it's real. For one, it's real. It's not this make-believe woo-woo crap. And two, like, this is what I'm meant for. Like, yeah, I'm a healer, and I can say that and not be embarrassed or scared to say it. I can, you know, step into that and own it. And it was just, it changed my life completely. Just changed
it. That's beautiful. I loved how... Oh, natural your approach has been, you know, from the heart opening crack of a deep breath, you know, talk about pure natural expansion. That's awesome.
Well, I couldn't deny it. Like, I wasn't sitting in church being emotionally manipulated by worship music. I wasn't listening to, you know, some meditation tape or a preacher on TV. Like, I was alone.
Yeah.
Holy Spirit was like, hey, girl, you need to get your shit together. And I was like, all righty. All righty, let's do it. And my friend I talked to yesterday, her name's Val on TikTok. She goes by Valdemort. She's wanting to get kind of a collective of energy workers and healers, meditators, instructors, and kind of make a directory sort of, so we can kind of refer one another and kind of share a pool of people, and we can all help people in different ways. It sounds really awesome. So I'm excited to see that be built and come to fruition. You know,
I like it.
Yep.
Sounds like a spiritual yellow pages.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So as far as your coaching sessions, I find your website and feel pulled to have a session with you. What does that look like?
Yeah. So, it's essentially just you buy a session. They're $1 a minute. So usually I found like I put a TikTok special out for 20 for 20, right? 20 minutes, 20 bucks. I found that even on those, I would chat with people for about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. So now people essentially just like, they go for the 40 for 40. And, you know, there's been a mix, like I would say maybe half the people, it's a one-off for them. They just need like a couple pieces of advice and then they're off and running and they don't need me anymore. And that's fine. And then there's another half that are like, I need every 2 weeks or every 1 week to chat with you and hold accountable and move forward, you know, especially people who are dealing with larger issues. That's been the case with them. But yeah, if you get to the website, it's just parkerdetchin.com and they go on there and it's just, you know, a PayPal checkout for a session. And then I coordinate with them as to the best time. We Zoom just like this. Mm-hmm. So it can be from anywhere, COVID friendly. And
right.
Yeah, we just, you know, I essentially just don't even small talk. We just cut right to it because it's a small amount of time when you really get into it. And I'm coming in blind, you know, I'm just coming off of my own life experience. You know, some people have been asking me like, well, you're not certified, you're not this, you're not that. And yeah, that's all true. But the reality is that like, you know, spiritual gurus for millennia haven't been certified by these organizations.
That's true.
So it really just comes down to like, if I can help you, which I have confidence that even if I can't, I can point you towards a teacher that can. Then, you know, I just enjoy the process of like, okay, so you have this like natural healing ability in this like visceral physical way. My talent or God-given gift, whatever you want to call it, is this like mental one. And I have the gift of gab. So like, I can read somebody like a book in the first spot. Like I just cut right to the chase and I say, okay, cool. What are you dealing with? What's going on in your life? They start to talk. And in the first 5 minutes, I can already basically see right through them what their issues are, what they're missing, what they need to hear. And then I have the gift of gab. So I can say it in this way that they can understand, that is a loving intention because I'm here to help them. And in the first session, most people gain the perspective that they need to be able to move forward in whatever lesson it is that they're learning. And honestly, like my background of doing so much work on myself over the last 36 years, I've probably tackled what it is. And if not, then I can at least see how that problem would be approached from a spiritual perspective. So it's essentially signing up for a session. We get right into whatever it is that the person is working on, wherever they're at on the path. And because of, you know, my history of helping others, like I've literally, like I said, been helping my friends and family my whole life. I have a blessing and a curse as a young man where my mom, bless her soul, was, let's say she's a very loving woman. She's a wonderful mother, but there were many, 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 many nights of like, high intense, dramatic, verbal conflict. Let's put it that way. And the thing that my mom would not allow was going to bed angry. And because of that tactic, the issue at hand couldn't be run away from. It had to be hashed out. And I gained an ability to see into her mind. And she, you know, as wonderful as she is, I think she needed reflection in a lot of ways. She, you know, she still struggles to see her own process. And so me being able to see it happening and illuminate her to it after a great deal of emotional and mental fatigue allowed me to nurture a skill of reading somebody and verbally presenting the solution has, you know, applied not only to myself and has been extremely helpful for myself, but also those around me. So like, you know, my older brothers come to me for advice on relationships or like whatever they're dealing with, because they see me handling similar situations with poise. And they're like, how the hell are you doing that? Right? Like, how, you know, like, how are you staying calm with this? Like, you don't react in the same ways. And they're, you know, it's a wonderful skill to be able to remain calm in difficult situations, or to have a spiritual perspective on another person or a dynamic or a situation that allows one to remain in that zen-like state that we see monks unshaken by. And I've strived for that so heavily in my life, or so ardently, that I've achieved some measure of it. I'm not perfect, but I've been able to taste what that looks like. You know, I have this life experience that really put me to that test about 2-3 years ago, where I manage an art studio in Hawaii. That's one of the things that I do. We have a co-op, and so there's all these artists, and we have neighbors in the building. And one of the neighbors was like really ornery, and he was always upset because our unit, being a production space, there was like a wood shop above his unit. He was a surf shaper, so he had all this dust, and the dust would be on the ceiling, and then the wood shop above him would bang on the ceiling, and the dust would rain down on his projects. Yeah, and he would get so upset about it. And this one day, he's like all mad, and one of the artists, she's this like sassy, cigarette smoking kind of punk rocker girl. She just wasn't having it from him. She was like, well, you know, screw you, basically. Mm-hmm. And like, they started doing this, and I come down, and I'm the manager, mediator type, you know, and I come in, and I ask her to leave so that I can deal with him directly as like the manager of the space. Like, don't deal with one of them, deal with me. And he is projecting his energy so hard. He's like, if you looked at his hand, his knuckles were clenched, like ready to throw down. Cause now here's a guy. Now he can throw fists if he wants to. And he projected so much energy onto me. And my first thought was, well, that's overwhelming, right? And how do I remain calm, and how do I deal with this? And I, as you put it, could physically feel the thing, and tried to use the muscle memory technique in the similar way that you're talking about, where, and like a little bit of pranayama to be able to like just breathe out that energy. So I also have lucid dreaming experience, where you need to be able to remain calm in that state to be able to stay in the dream. And it was a real test. It was a real challenge as to whether I could remain calm while all his energy was in my auric field. And so I succeeded. I was able to breathe and just let him keep going off while I let it all sort of dissipate and stay in my center and remain, you know, in this relaxed state, and was able to speak from that state and say, well, I understand. And, you know, it is what it is. And like, maybe we can come to a way where, you know, there's certain hours where they're cutting wood and you're working, or like, let's figure this out. And he couldn't handle the fact that I was so calm, and eventually he just exited. Like, he couldn't deal with it. So to me, it was like that kind of a thing. If I can handle someone screaming in my face and white knuckling environment, that like the average situation in, like, you know, in life is so much tamer than that.
Definitely.
So yeah. It's stuff like that where I'm like, my upbringing, passing tests like that, where I'm like, okay, let's hear what you're dealing with, because like, it's got to be less intense.
Yeah.
And
even if all you do in your coaching is teach people how to do that in those type of situations, that'll change a lot of energy in the world. But I know you're going to help people with more than just that. But yeah. You know, like you were saying about certifications, you know, like more than half the time, honestly, especially in a spiritual space, certifications don't mean jack. You know, maybe looked online and took a test, and so now you have a piece of paper that says you can do this, but can you really do it? You know
what? When I was looking into it, I actually just found some of their testing materials and was like, oh, it's just nonviolent communication and like loving intention. It's like, it's all the things I'm already doing.
Right. Right.
I kind of brushed it off. I brushed it off. And like one thing that somebody brought up the other day was like, this topic of conversation, and essentially like where my mind went was this idea that, if somebody has a problem, they might hear the same solution from 10 people, but they're only going to listen to one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it doesn't necessarily, it's not the information. It's the voice. It's the messenger. And that's why, you know, I'm using my social media output as a blanket statement of saying, like, when I offer my services in every 10th video on TikTok and say like, hey, what my pitch is essentially, if this messenger is resonating with you, if I'm somebody that you'll listen to rather than your mom or your dad or your brother or your uncle, then let me help you. Because if I'm the messenger, then let me help you get the message here.
Right. Because you have to resonate with who you're learning from. Like, you have to. There has to be some reason that you choose that person. And one cool thing about your coaching services, I like that they're not financially unattainable. Like, most people can, like, they can call and be like, hey, can we do a 10 minute? All I got is $10, you know, and like
$10. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can, like, talk for 10 minutes.
Money for me. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know when
I'll still end up chatting with them for an hour.
Right. Okay. Right.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I got, ready to, certify in Reiki, and like, that's needed because you have to be attuned by, you know, and so, yeah, I wanted that certification, but
I understand.
I didn't want to hop online and let some stranger attune me. Sure. I didn't feel right about that. And I have a very dear friend. I'd known her for over a decade, and she was, you know, on her healing journey, and she was doing Reiki for people, but she wasn't teaching. And I was just praying. I like, oh, I hope she teaches someday. She's really the only person I think I would trust. So I'll just wait and we'll see. And not a week later, she called me and she's like, hey, I'm thinking about teaching Reiki. Would you be interested in that at all? And I was like, oh, yes, yes. You know, we talked a long time and I was like, I'm so glad that you said this. I want my attunement, but I don't trust anyone, you know? And she's like, well, I wanted to teach, but I was too nervous that no one would come, you know? So it was like, so good that it worked out that way.
Perfect storm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think you're right. Like, if you just kind of put that out there, like, the people who need to find you will find you, you know?
Yeah, a lot of my favorite comments on TikTok videos are, wow, this is exactly what I needed today. Or, you know, oh, this is exactly the message I needed to hear. Like, that is the reason that I'm putting stuff out. And that's the, you know, it's the gift of the giver. You know, I'm sure you feel it every single session. It's this spiritual idea of in giving you receive, and there's no need for another outcome to come from it. Like, that's right. Why it's not that's why it's not the monetary amount. It's the gift of giving in this way. That's where the receiving really happens. The money is just a token of like somebody willing to put forward some energy to help themselves and to take a step.
Yeah, it's just energy exchange, you know.
Yeah. To me, it's energy exchange in the saying of like, okay, I understand that you're going to be like helping or giving in some way, and there's that. But like, to me, it's like, it's more of a token of somebody's psyche. Like somebody, like what my most recent client said, I asked her, you know, okay, what are you not doing that you should be doing? And she said, well, I'm not doing anything. And I'm like, well, you're here with me. And she said, okay, yeah. So, you know, taking the step, paying the $40 was the only thing that I've done. So it's a step in that way. It's saying I'm going to, you know, put my money where my mouth is, basically, and try to take a step forward. So for me, it's more a token of like the mind that's saying like, I want to heal. Let's go in this direction, because, you know, like people talk about like manifestation and all this stuff where it's like, to me, the process really, you don't see anything. You don't see physical results until you take physical action, right? You can have a mental thought and you'll have some mental reaction. You could say stuff out loud and you might like hear some verbal confirmations here and there. You might like hear something that reminds you of positive outcome. And then once you take a physical step, you start to see physical reality bend towards your will. And so I think it's that physical nature of like the energy exchange that you're talking about, that's like allowing them mentally to say, okay, it's time for healing. And here's the token that is the highlighter or like the indicator of that.
Yeah. Like a reference point where they can look at this, like I'm doing this, like it's time. Right. I'm going to make it happen. Like that's cool.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what it looks like in general to me. And it's, you know, I was nervous at first, but like the reality is like, I've been doing this my whole life for myself and others. And it's like, now I've just kind of made it something that the general public can access. And it's luckily been super straightforward because we live in a time where you don't need a brick and mortar and everyone's got Zoom and here we are. And it's been really lovely, honestly. Like the gift of giving to me is like, I'm more energized after sessions than before.
Oh, totally. And, totally. Yeah. I feel that.
Yeah. Yep. Which is a good sign.
It is. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. I will put all your information in the show notes. So if people want to book a session with you, they can go straight to your website and do that. Cool. And of course, we can find you on TikTok. What's your handle on there?
Parker Ruolio. It's Parker Ruolio. It's what my dad used to, or still calls me, Parker Ruolio.
Yeah.
It's my childhood nickname from my dad. It was either that or my brother's friends used to always call me P-Man. But I went with Parker Ruolio. I thought it would be a little funnier.
That's probably a better name than P-Man on TikTok. There's no telling who you would get creeping on your page.
Yeah, P-Man has like a weird sexual innuendo, and it's also more of like a rapper name. Like, you lit up, it's P-Man or whatever. I like Parker Ruolio. So yeah, that's how people can find me on TikTok. I'm very excited to hit. I'm at 92,000 right now, so I'm trying to get to 100. It's been wild. It's been a wild ride. It really is blowing up fast. I had a couple go viral. I had one hit over 1 million recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really fun. It's been amazing engagement and community, and I'm glad that you were able to find me on there. And Parker Ruolio.
Okay, yeah, we'll put all that in the notes so people can find you and you can get to work and helping some folks heal and calm down.
yeah, everyone's got their own thing, and yeah, I'm just here to help.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you. And
thank you, Amanda.
Hopefully you can come back sometime. If you've got anything else going on, you're always welcome. And we'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye, everybody.